Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Today's program, well, that's the Copyright Forum. And joining us today, Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They are here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art. And we've already had an absolutely nauseating discussion about sinus issues, so hopefully that's out of the way. And now we'll just talk about, you know, copyright law, public domain and stuff. No sinus. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Oh, the things you hear in Studio A. You can also email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Paul, Polly, Bill, your copyright calls coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Oh, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today it's the Copyright Forum, and to answer your questions, we have a great panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues. Bill Westwood, one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is a past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown and Nantucket, Massachusetts. If you have an intellectual property question, give us a shout, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Bill Westwood, Polly Law, Paul Rapp, welcome back.
Hey. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving, all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And one edit. I'm now not located in the Berkshires anymore. I'm in the Hudson Valley.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
The Great Hudson Valley.
Okay, so let's cut this and
The
Mid Hudson Valley.
I'm sure yes. The script will be fixed by your 10th appearance after this. you'll have to correct me. All right, Hudson Valley. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer in the Hudson Valley. All right, we'll start. Hey, Chanel West Coast getting sued by Sharon Stone. Have you heard about this?
No.
Oh.
This is from Forbes magazine.
Yes.
Earlier this month. And I think, were you guys scheduled earlier this month and then we had a hearing or something? Award-winning actress Sharon Stone is suing rapper Chanel West Coast, real name Chelsea Dudley, for the rapper's use of the Basic Instinct star's name in the 2018 song Sharon Stone. In asserting causes of action for 1, violation of the Lanham Act, 2, violation of the California common law right of publicity, and 3, violation of the California statutory right of publicity, Stone alleges, quote, challenged to achieve success as a rap artist. On information and belief, defendant Dudley has sought to enhance her stature as a rapper by invoking and trading on the celebrity status and fame of others. Stone alleges in the song, defendant Dudley gratuitously repeats the name Sharon Stone 33 times and the name Sharon 99 times.
Oh, my God.
So does this...
I think Sharon Stone should pay Ms. Dudley for the free publicity, because how much have we been hearing from Sharon Stone recently?
But, but nonetheless, you know, on the... she's got a pretty good case there, it sounds like.
You think?
Oh, you think? Really?
Yeah.
Well, let's start suing Don McLean, you know?
Right.
I mean, and anybody else, and Dion for Abraham Martin and John, for crying out loud. I mean, it's kind of funny. I think saying Sharon Stone 99 times.
Yeah.
And a lawsuit's not one of them. I mean, you know.
It's some magic incantation, right? okay, so what is the Lanham Act? Do we know what that is?
That's the Trademark Act.
Right.
And you can't get a trademark on your name for being who you are.
Okay.
And so that one
but
fails.
Her publicity rights.
The common law
her name
right, a statutory right of publicity.
Is where, in California, is where she's got some strength, I think.
Well, I think only if it implies a commercial endorsement by using the name, and there's nothing... by saying somebody's name over and over again, over a beat.
I don't know. We'll have to watch this one and see how it goes.
Chanel West Coast, obviously a gifted lyricist. So.
Yes. And the second coming of Ira Gershwin.
Really nice
work. You know, and the Chanel number five company doesn't seem to be too concerned. So,
well, also, yeah. I thought that was an interesting one. We'll see how that progresses. Well, let's jump on the phones here at 8. Oh, before we do that, did you have an update, Bill, on the CASE Act? I know we've talked about this before.
Well, I don't have the update. Polly said, where did you say it got hung up after it was passed?
Paul said.
The CASE Act is an Copyright Alternative in Small Claims Enforcement Act, which is potentially going to enable those who are infringed to get recompense in theory without having to go through the expensive federal court system.
And we've talked about this, and there is a downside to this potentially as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, my problem with, and a lot of people's problem with it, is there's copyright trolls out there who, run around. There's, one of the most egregious is Higbee and Associates, which I think is one guy in San Diego that has a contract with Getty, Getty Archives.
This guy Leibowitz.
And the guy Leibowitz, who's about going...
He's about to go to jail.
He's about finished.
For claiming his grandfather died in front of a judge.
I've dealt with both of them, and they're just clowns. But he sends these, cease and desist orders and demands thousands and thousands of dollars for people... they're usually not using unauthorized photographs on their website, but they're asking for like multiples of what a licensing fee would be.
Right.
And, I tell clients just to ignore them, because they're not going to really do anything. Leibowitz was actually suing people. But
right.
The Higbee guy, I don't think has.
Okay.
Well, but this will give them a venue.
A cheaper venue for... extracting some money.
But if they could work this out, if they can solve those problems, you would be able to get anywhere from $7,500 up to $15,000 for work that was not registered.
Well, it also,
really?
as it stands now, if you end up in regular small claims court
right.
because your work is not registered, the chances of you prevailing are slim to none.
No, they're none to slim.
Yeah, and this at least would have judges that know something.
Who know something about.
Yeah, who know something about copyright.
Because
I agree, for every copyright troll I deal with, I've got somebody who's been infringed.
Right.
And it's just not worth,
Yeah, and one of the problems is hopefully those people appointed to hear these cases would be knowledgeable, because one of the problems in the federal copyright system, based on my own experience, is more often than not you have a judge who knows about as much about copyright as some guy you'd encounter on the street out there.
Yeah, and his clerks know less.
And his clerks know less. Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum. Polly Law, Paul Rapp, and Bill Westwood here to answer your questions. Eric in Red Hook, you're first. Eric.
Hey, good afternoon. I make a food product. I make a hot sauce, and I have a little three-word sort of catchphrase that goes with it, kind of along the lines of like Heinz 57 varieties. And I registered a web page as a .com with that phrase, and I'm just curious, what do I have to do in order to trademark it so that – because it's kind of clever, and I don't really want anybody else using it.
What's going on with that mic? Just leave that one on there.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, Zach. It's okay.
Can you hear me now? Yeah, it wasn't you. It was me.
My attack engineer is getting upset. Just so you know, Paul. Be careful.
You should register the trademark with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. USPT.
What's involved in doing that?
The filing fee is going to be $225. You have to, and it's tricky. I mean, I, would advise you to have a counsel.
You really need to have an attorney to help you with trademark.
Or if not an attorney, someone who's been through the...
Okay.
It's not rocket science. I do it, but... but it can be... I mean, for every client I have that has gotten their own trademark, I've got five that have tried and screwed it up, and then they come to me to fix, the damage. So, it's not a huge jump, and it shouldn't cost you more than $1,000 soup to nuts to get it.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
All right. That works. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum today on Vox Pop. One more before the break. Eric in Ashfield. Eric, you're on.
Hi. Thanks. I'm a photojournalist and sometimes do exhibit photographs that I make on assignment or on my own personal projects in galleries and such. And I've got a couple exhibits coming up next year, as usual, around the region. But I wonder what the panel thinks about how to protect your work, especially in, you know, in terms of one of the exhibits is going to be probably my biggest exhibit to date. And, you know, the images from this series are been published in magazines. There's one on the cover of a magazine coming out in a couple weeks now. And it's a series that people find really interesting. But there's not a whole lot of money in fine art photography, and so I've never really done it much to look into how to protect that intellectual property, it were. And I wonder what you think.
Well,
register the work, but,
yeah.
But
have you registered any of it
with the copyright office?
Yeah,
it would have been better had you not had you done this as a group before you published it. Because now you'll have to file individual registrations. How many pieces are you talking about?
Well, I've got probably north of 100 in this series, but I'll be exhibiting probably 30.
Well, how many of those 30 or how many of those 100 have been published already?
Probably 20. In various places.
And what we're talking about here is once a work has been published, you have to then register it individually. Unpublished works you can do with photography. It's still...
$750.
You can do 750 unpublished works with one $55 application, which is kind of absurd. But the other ones... you know, I would just pick the ones that you think are the hottest and most likely to sell and the most likely to be, you know, the most vulnerable in your collection and register those. And if you do one work one at a time, that the filing fee for that will be $35.
But if he has, say, 10 pieces that were picked up by the same publication, used all to accompany the same article... They could be as a group.
I think so, yeah.
For one fee.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
All right, we need to take a break here. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum. Paul, Bill, Polly are here, and you are there. You call us, and you'll be here as well. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's the Copyright Forum. We have Polly Law here. We have Paul Rapp here and Bill Westwood. And Bill, you wanted to follow up on the last caller.
Yeah, I just wanted to say to, I believe it was Eric, that after the show, I mean, you register what you can register, but after the show, I would keep doing image searches for those pieces that were not registered. And for the ones that are registered as well. And if you find for the unregistered ones that somebody starts infringing it, immediately go ahead and file for registration for that. Because if, in my experience, if somebody infringes something once, somebody else is going to infringe it another time. And once you get that registration in, you've got potential statutory damages.
All right, back to the phones we go, and Ellen in Schenectady. Ellen, you're up.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My siblings and I have transcribed many family letters and diaries from the 1860s right up through 1923, and we want to get these copyrighted before sending them off to our second and third cousins. I've been to the government copyright website, but I can't find any clear-cut answers as to if these are copyrightable, because the first thing is, at this point, I'm not sure if they're already in the public domain because they were written before 1923, or if they aren't because they've never been transcribed or published before. And then if we can copyright them, who would we list as the author on the registration form?
I think they're all going to be in the public domain. Yeah. And it's going to be, for something that old, unpublished, it's all going to be keyed to the death of the author. And I would have to look. There's a great tool online if you just write copyright slide rule or digital copyright slide rule. You'll get this great little interactive tool that'll ask you various questions about the piece, and it'll tell you whether or not it's in the public domain or whether it's definitely has copyright protection or whether it's somewhere in between, and these are the questions you have to answer in order to get to the ultimate answer.
What do we search for?
Digital copyright slide rule.
Okay.
You know, that being said, you can copyright this as a collection of letters, your selection and your presentation and the order you put them in. So you can get some copyright protection for this.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm just curious as to why you feel you need to register them.
We don't know the cousins personally. We just know that we share the same great-grandparents. And we don't want them to take and use them for any kind of financial gain on their part or to do anything we wouldn't want them to do with them.
Is it a famous family?
No.
So give the collection a name and register it under that name.
Oh, okay. Okay, so we can do that. Now, would the authors be the people who wrote the letters or would it be those of us who transcribed them?
People who wrote the letters initially.
Yeah.
People from the 1960s, 70s, 80s, or 1860s, 70s, 80s?
Yeah.
That's who would be listed.
Even though they're doing it under a title? Why wouldn't it be edited by?
Then you could say edited by. I mean, they would be the authors, but you could always give yourself a credit for transcribed and edited by, you know.
Okay. It's just on the actual registration form when it says list authors. I just want to make sure we put the right people. Because there's got to be different 50, 60 different people who wrote the actual letters.
Well, you made Paul wince.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. For the application.
Yeah, yeah, I would do it under one or two names, you know,
I would say, compiled by.
Right.
Okay.
Because all the works are in the public domain, so the authorship isn't really...
Sure.
That'll make it much easier.
It's not important.
Right.
Compiled by. Okay.
Well, thanks, Ellen.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. Have a
good... Yep, you too. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, and Marcy in Leverett. Marcy, you're on.
Hi there.
Hello.
I'm illustrating a hand-drawn map of a town in the Midwest, and I'm just not really sure how you go about registering and copywriting, what the procedure is, how long it takes. And my concern is that I'm just not sure how to introduce my hand-drawn work into the digital era. As soon as I put it out there, I know that it'll be photographed and all over the place. So how do I protect my rights around that?
Okay, what you're going to do is, number one, are you doing this under contract?
No, I am doing it independently. And it is something that I hope to reproduce and sell.
I see. Okay, so your first step is to take it to a good quality scanner and have it scanned. And then you can take that digital copy, probably a PDF or a JPEG. You can color correct it, whatever you need to do on a computer. And that is what you are going to go to copyright.gov and register it. And that will be what you deposit digitally with your registration.
Yeah, the artwork is called the deposit, just so you know.
Why?
I have no idea. It's very misleading. The first time you do this, you're looking at deposit and you're thinking,
how much?
How much?
Right.
I'll never forget my first experience with that. But anyway, it's called a deposit. Don't go there.
Do
not go there, Paul. Do not go there.
Oh, boy.
Marcy, do you have a follow up?
Well, just how much time does this process take?
Well, how web savvy are you?
Yeah. I mean, the application itself, I mean, as we always say, have a drink before you go on because it's frustrating.
Or during.
Or during because it's one of the most badly designed websites ever. But then once you have the application in, you know, if it's one work by a single author.
Last one I did took about 6 months.
Really?
7 months, yeah.
I got one back in like 3 weeks and it blew my mind.
But it
will take usually months.
But isn't it considered registered once
registered upon
deposit?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
All right.
Registered upon deposit.
All right.
So it probably will take about a half an hour of your time and a nice glass of wine.
And a few months of waiting after
that. Mm-hmm.
All right, Marcy, hey, good luck. Thanks a lot. 800-348-2551. Copyright Forum today on Vox Pop. Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp are here, and David is in Johnstown. David.
Oh, hi. I'm a folk singer, and I've been for 40 years, I've been sending in collections of songs, you know, about 5 or 10 songs at a time. This last time, I was rejected, and they said I could only copyright one of the 10 songs for my $85. They said in March they discontinued allowing collections of songs. Now you said that I could have 750 photos.
Yeah, that's specific to photographs.
What do you think's going on?
I agree, Dave.
Why would punish the songwriter?
Well, they punish illustrators too, so
they
know.
Do.
Yep.
Yeah.
10
well,
is the limit.
On what pretext, for Pete's sake?
I don't know. Thank you for asking.
You're asking about the copyright office, Ray.
It's okay. financial. were these songs all together on one album?
Oh, there's not an album. I just write them out,
Okay.
Because I'm not famous. I'm not, never going to be.
And so these works are unpublished, right?
Yes.
So you should be able to do it. I think 10 is the number you can do. You can do up to 10.
But in March, they changed it, and they said I can only do one at a time for my $85.
No.
I don't know. Maybe you'll look it up.
No.
It
used to be unlimited number of any kind
really?
Of any kind of work you could do. But I believe in March, they limited it now to 10.
Did you by any chance call the Copyright Office and speak to someone?
No,
directly?
I wrote them a letter. I said, please give me a dispensation, at least for these 10.
I would... I would suggest that you actually call them and talk to
the examiner
and try to get the actual
information.
And they're actually fairly easy to reach, and they're, in my experience, they've always been pretty helpful.
Yeah, they're pretty helpful there, yeah.
All right, David, thanks a lot for the call. It's the Copyright Forum today on Vox Pop, and let's go to Lisa in Ballston Lake. Lisa.
How you doing? I posted a image that I drew on Pinterest a few years ago.
Oh, no.
I know, right?
Oh,
it is registered, but I'm finding it on like a dozen different websites on T-shirts and stuff. Is there anything I can do about it?
Yeah, you can contact Paul Rapp.
Some other qualified copyright attorney.
Contact a copyright attorney because you have some definite...
Yeah.
You've caused...
infringements, and they can be worth a lot of money.
Yeah, but what are the odds that Lisa in Ballston Lake has the resources to fight these?
If it's registered, she's got the resources, because if the work is registered, you find an attorney that'll do it on a contingency. And, you know, basically it costs you a filing fee of a couple of $100 or actually for the attorney to write a cease and desist letter and then perhaps a filing fee if it goes that far. But
the cease and desist letter doesn't get me money.
I've done this 23 or 4 times, and I've made enough money to retire on.
Really?
Okay.
All right. That's somebody's phone, Lisa.
Good
luck,
Lisa.
It's not a Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
You did the right thing.
Lisa, call Paul or somebody or me or...
Call somebody, or
Polly and discuss it if you want to, because I guarantee you...
You've got a case.
Okay. Yeah. And I appreciate Paul mentioning that we're not allowed to solicit business, and thank you for bringing up other possible attorneys, because otherwise we'll all go to the pokey together.
Okay.
Let's go to David in Ellenville. David, you're on.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. I actually am starting up a web development business
going to be incorporated here in the next month or so. And I'm also taking coursework right now, and something that came up recently had to do with images that I was using as resources online, and trying to discern between the ones that have you need to get permission to use versus ones that you do not. And I noticed recently when I was searching some images for a website I was working on that there were three different categories, that there are ones that are, you know, forgive me if I'm not using the right terminology, but essentially that there are images that you do have to ask permission and or pay for to use on your website. And then there are ones that you could use that you can alter and use the altered image for free. And then there are others that are kind of the equivalent of public domain on the web. And they actually have a Google function for this. My question is, number one, do we know if this is absolutely reliable as a source to indicate what what is legal? Okay. And then my second question is, if that's not the case, is there a resource that you recommend to be able to verify those images? Because unlike the previous caller, I'm actually trying to make sure that I'm not, you know, infringing on anybody before I publish sites.
Well, if you're on a reputable site, you know, if you're on some site from Estonia, you know, all bets are off. But you know, if it's a wiki images, if it's an official, you know, and if it says, you know, this is all, you know, Creative Commons license images, you know, if it smells okay, then the likelihood of being duped and posting something that's otherwise protected is going to be pretty low. Plus, you know, if somebody complains, you can say, look, I found it on this site. It said it's public domain. I did my due diligence.
But do they have
maybe,
any?
Maybe you didn't.
Right. Would that site have the culpability then?
You'd probably just have to take it down.
Yeah. I mean, chances are you'll just have to take it down.
The other thing you can do, if you can determine who owns the image, you can Google them and contact them directly. I've always said if somebody were to contact me, you know, I'd be happy to discuss licensing my work, but it's when people just steal it flat out and I discover it by accident that I'm going to go after them.
You love to go to court, don't you?
I do.
You just the gleam he gets.
He paid for his retirement.
Paul got me started years ago, you know, and taught me well.
It's like a kid at Christmas, you know. Oh, it's a lawsuit. Here comes Bill Westwood again.
That's right.
All right, one more call before the next break, and Jorman and Saugerties, you're on.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a very weird situation. I made several hundred unpublished songs over about 10 years, and somebody recorded me making those songs. I never registered them until last year, but the issue is that I registered them over a year after they were created, and they're already all being used. So I found an intellectual property attorney, but he basically just charged me a lot of money to file applications and didn't want to do any digital forensics. And now the company, I had all of it saved on my laptop, and then I had a second copy on my email server, and I actually called up the company and asked them if they saw my email, and they put me on mute, and then the email disappeared. So I don't know what to do. Hmm.
Well, I would speak to another copyright attorney. I've dealt with a number of copyright attorneys over the years. Paul happens to be a very good one, and I mean that sincerely.
You mean some are not good?
Some are not good.
Oh.
Some advertise themselves as copyright attorneys, and they do not know diddly squat about copyright and how to
want to be copyright
and
attorneys.
How to pursue a case.
Yeah.
So I would start by contacting another copyright attorney.
Okay.
Yeah, and one thing, I mean, it depends, again, how it's used, who's putting it out there, and what they are. I mean, I get calls all the time from musicians that find their stuff on a database from some music site, again, you know, in like in Estonia or Latvia. And I'm like, you know, you can't chase down every infringement because some of them are just not going to be worth your while. And these, you know, guys in Eastern Bloc nations, you're not going to get anything. You're not going to find them, for one thing, and you're not going to get anything if you do.
Okay. Well, We'll have to take a quick break here. Paul Rapp is here. Bill Westwood, Poly Law. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. The Copyright Forum will be back. John Schofield for you. Combo 66 as our bumper music today on Vox Pop. The Copyright Forum, Poly Law, Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp are here to answer your questions. Boy, the phones have been really busy today on the program. And Mike, must be wrong numbers. Michael in Shaftesbury, Vermont. Michael, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I have a design that I created in 2005, and I tried to copyright it. Because I thought, I can't believe nobody's ever thought of this. And I received a letter back from the Copyright Office about 6 months later saying, we cannot register this work because it lacks the authorship necessary to support a copyright claim.
Yep.
I neglected to read the other stuff they sent to me, which said I could appeal it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if there's any chance to appeal it at this late date, which is years later, through referencing the control number they sent me on that response.
I've gotten several of those. They seem to be tightening up on that. I've gotten several that are just absolutely wrong, where they say that it lacks sufficient copyrightable content. I mean, the Supreme Court has said it doesn't take much. It takes a very little bit, and I've had stuff rejected, and it's infuriating. The thing is, appealing to the administrative copyright board, I think it costs $200 or $300 to do it, and there's a 95% failure rate at least. I would suggest just going and registering it again and hoping you get a different examiner who has their head screwed on straight.
Why would they tighten up?
I don't know.
Well, first of all, design work is typically...
Yeah, graphic design is very
graphic design
very
is typically
difficult.
Not copyrightable, so it would kind of depend...
On a specific piece. Yeah,
I'd almost want to see the image to...
Could I describe the image to you?
Are you the guy that's been emailing me?
I did email you, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sculpture. That's a three-dimensional sculpture, and that should be registered.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, if it's that, it should
it
be.
Is. It's gigantic, and it's cool.
Thank you. They didn't know that, though, because I made the sculpture to present it to the public after I had applied for copyright.
Well, then take
a picture of the sculpture.
A couple of photographs of the sculpture and
apply.
And specifically say this is a three-dimensional sculpture I'm registering and you'll get it.
Take it from a couple of angles with a scale. So you originally attempted to register a sketch of the piece?
Yes, I did it by describing it as...
They would never do that.
No, you got to have an image.
Yeah,
don't have a lot of imagination, I guess.
Well, no, because copyright only applies to the physical representation of an idea.
Yeah, you can't copyright.
Not an idea.
And they're going to say this is just the instructions for making the sculpture, and that's not going to do it. I had a guy who was doing... It was a template for cutting out wood, but it was all repetitive and it was just beautiful. And I sent in one that had nothing written on it. It was just all these lines on a piece
schematic.
Of paper. And that got, but then there was one that made it clear that these were just instructions. You cut here and you cut here and there's this dimension and that dimension, virtually the same drawing. And that was rejected because it was instructions.
Right.
And I'm like, whoa. Michael's dealing with.
Well, Michael, thanks for the call. It's the Copyright Forum today on Vox Pop. And Bill in Columbia County. Bill.
How you doing? Thanks for having me today.
Sure.
I've been in the business for 25 years as a sign designer. And poor man's copyright. I want to know your thoughts on that.
Oh my gosh, they don't like this, Bill. I got to be honest with you.
No,
they don't. They're not going to make money. But I tell you, it's held up in court 3 times for me.
Okay.
And then the other thing is, when you do
digital design work, everything is time-stamped. If you save it properly and you do a control print screen, you can have the time date stamped every time you do a change. You just print it out. And they will, it does hold up in court.
How is it held up in court for you?
Because when you make a change to a drawing,
No. What cases?
What were you claiming? What were you claiming?
I've done work for a major town in the area, and they basically duplicated exactly the drawings that I submitted as a bid. All right, so I supplied the bid with the drawing, and I lost the job, but the guy produced a sign the same, and it was exactly the same. He won the bid because he was that much cheaper.
But did you get statutory damages?
I don't think he brought a copyright claim.
Did.
This was a contract claim. This wasn't a copyright claim.
It was a bid. It was a bid on a contract.
Right.
And
they
duplicated it.
Poor man's copyright has nothing to do with that case.
That's a separate.
No, that's a timestamp on a digital. The poor man's copyright, as far as paperwork going into the mail, sending it to yourself and not opening it.
Yeah, we understand what it is. And it's bogus.
Well, no, but in a contract case, it might work. And he just said there's no reason to doubt.
Case, yeah.
But if this was copyright litigation, it wouldn't.
No.
Because you have to register before you get in the door.
Yeah.
So this was a contract case.
And it might work in that case.
And it might work in that case.
Yeah.
So,
well, Bill, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551. Why?
No, just because, you know, we've been saying it's worthless, but it isn't quite. He made it work.
He found a way to make
for
it work.
For a contract case,
it
works. But for copyright, no.
All right, let's go to Mike in New Windsor. Mike, you're on.
Hello, guys. I had three inventions. One was quite successful. And I found out through the whole thing, it wasn't the physical part of it, but the copywriting and the work that needs to be done. You really have to have a lawyer. I mean, you can go online and look at I have some other ideas that I'm working on. But when it comes to finally doing all that work, you guys can answer a question snapped like that.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a question, we have to go look it up, and we're not even sure. But all the inventions I've had and the success I've had is always because I had a lawyer that gave me the right answer.
Yeah, and especially, patents are a whole different animal,
right. And
that is absolutely required.
Right. There are three types of intellectual property. Patents, trademarks, and copyrights, and they're all individual, and they all require different things to get them registered and protected.
And the other biggest thing, of course, is money, because I had two Wall Street angels that helped me. I wouldn't have never been able to do it on my own.
Right.
And then after the first one, the second one came easier because you had it's school. Everything is an education. So it was an interesting process. But the copywriting, I mean, even the images that I have of some of my inventions, you know, I learned a lot from that because it could look like it's all your original, but it's not, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, Mike, thank you very much for the call, and we appreciate the input. Copyright Forum today on the show, Dino in Bloomingburg. Dino, how you doing?
Good afternoon, folks. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple questions regarding photography copyrights.
Uh-huh.
For 30 years, I was involved in my family photography business, as far back as actually producing proofs for customers, where we actually had to stamp the proof saying proof do not copy,
mm-hmm.
or with a copyright stamp on it.
Right.
Then later on, the photo lab started to integrate a copyright stamp on the back of the proofs when they printed them. The professional photographers, and I'm not really clear on the law on this, said for a long time, the PPFA said that once you click the shutter, your photo is automatically copyrighted, especially if you're doing it for business. And our main concern was whether or not people were taking the proofs and getting them copied to enlarge themselves.
Right.
And then when we went digital, obviously, that's a whole different story. We weren't producing proofs. So could anybody tell me the correct answer on the actual copyright, if it's actually copyrighted when you snap the shutter of the camera?
Yes.
Since 1978, once the work is in fixed form, which means on your film or on your on your disc or whatever little thing there is in your digital camera that you own the copyright to that image.
But for maximum protection, you have to register that copyright with the Copyright Office.
Right.
Yeah, and
I
if you're
the studio it, was.
And if you're in a professional photography, you know, business, you're not going to be running and sending stuff to the Copyright Office every couple of days. I would just make it a matter of contract that the people agree not to copy the stuff and that they will only get it from you.
It's business leverage.
I actually left the business in 2004, but this has obviously been bugging me for all this time, whether or not that we were actually copyrighted or not.
Yeah.
You were covered.
You were covered.
Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Dino. And over to Sean in New Ashford. Sean.
Yes. Hello, folks. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question regarding what is the starting point in protecting an idea for a website or a computer app before approaching a developer about building it for me?
You probably want to talk to the developer and have him sign a non-disclosure agreement where, you know, you say, I'm going to give you my idea, I'm going to give you all of this stuff that I've, you know, come up with in my head, and you, and I'm hiring you, and in return for that, you're not going to rip
me
off.
But first, you're going to sign this little sheet saying that you're not going to rip me off.
You're not going to rip me off. That's a non-disclosure agreement, and you know, they can be leaky, and there's ways to get around them, and I've, you know, but, you know, I mean, no software developer is going to stay in business long ripping off his client's ideas. So,
sure.
And they'll.
So it's that informal? It's not something that I would trademark or copyright?
Not yet, no. I mean, it's possible if it's really groundbreaking, you could possibly patent the functionality of the app, but that, you know, is a $10,000 1-2 year proposition. So
I see. Okay.
You know.
All right, and then if I were to follow through with having a developer develop this app and it goes public, then what's the next step in protecting it?
Then I think
or is there a next step in protecting it?
Copyright the screens of the app and trademark the name of the app, and that's probably the best
you can do.
Best you can do.
All right, Sean, thanks a lot. Over to Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike.
Hey, y'all. I am researching, I'm doing research on a book I'm writing about trees, and I found a photograph in the digital collections of UC Berkeley Library, and it's a really great photograph. They have it unattributed, but I searched the rest of the collection, and I think I found who took the photograph, and he took it in 1924. But the library won't say, yes, that's the person who took it. So it's still sort of in that status. He died in 1972. He has one surviving child who is 87 years old, and the library gave me the contact information of another relative that I believe is a great-grandson. I really want to use this photo in the book. And so I guess ultimately it comes down to whomever publishes the book and what they're comfortable with. But what do you suggest for me? The library have been very helpful, but they say, we don't own the copyright to this. We can't give you permission to use it.
Right.
But I don't really, I'm 99% sure this is the guy who took the photo, but I'm not 100% sure.
And is that a standalone photo, or was it published in 1924? Was it published?
As far as I know, it was never published. It was he was a professor of forestry at UC Berkeley, and he gave his collection to the library of some 7,000 photographs. And so they're just all in the library's collection.
Yeah, I would contact the grandkids and say, this is what I've got. And
Did your grandfather do this?
Yeah, do you know?
And what if they don't know?
Well,
then ask them for permission and
hope for the best.
He did the best he could.
Yeah. And
the grandfather, he shot many, many photos of forests, and there's a handful in this 7,000 photo collection that are unattributed, and they have a number stamp in the bottom corner, and that's how I was able to match up to say, yes, this guy was taking photographs in North Carolina with this timestamp. So I'm certain that it's his.
Yeah.
Good job on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would ask them for permission.
With the family.
Yeah, and they probably won't want a licensing fee for something like this. They'll just want a complete credit for their grandfather.
Yeah, I would offer them a credit.
If they want a licensing fee, it's going to be
minuscule.
Piddling,
yeah.
I hope.
All right, Mike, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Quickly over to Linda in Cambridge. Linda, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just yes. A quick question since you guys were on. I'm putting together a program for a choir, and one of the members sent me a translation so we don't have to go searching. They got it offline. It's a Mozart piece, but the translation is from the Latin to the English. But he said it was copywritten on the web, on the wherever he got it. So I'm just wondering about our using it in our program.
Well, the Mozart piece is certainly going to be in the public domain.
But it depends on when the translation.
But it's the translation. So
translation might not be. And oftentimes, music publishers put a copyright notice on something that's fully in the public domain because they can, and because it's their presentation. They're not getting a whole lot of protection on it. They're certainly not getting the melody or the lyrics. They're just getting their presentation on a piece of paper.
If you're really worried, you could always just contact the website and say, can we put this in our Christmas choir concert?
Yeah, and it could be reproduced from something from years ago that is in the public domain anyways. I mean, you just don't know until you investigate a little bit.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Linda. I guess that's about all we have time for. Bill Westwood, how do people find you on the web?
Oh, you can go to BillWestwood.com or WestwoodMedical.com.
All right. And if they get sued by you, how do they get in touch?
My attorney.
All right. Polly Law, how do people find you?
PMLaw@ButtonwoodArt.com.
And Paul Rapp.
Paul@PaulRapp.com.
Well, thank you all for being here. Support comes from New England Hydroponics, the indoor gardening experts, offering a full selection of hydroponic supplies, organic soils, and indoor gardening equipment, located in Auburn, Marlboro, Seekonk, and Southampton, Massachusetts, online at nehydro.com. Kent Hicks Construction Company, featuring East Branch Homes, a new division of hybrid prefab homes that are net zero ready and low in embodied carbon, traditional to modern styles available, eastbranchhomes.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic medicine and cosmetics, plastic surgery of the face, breasts, and body, a surgeon's hands, a woman's touch since 1996, 518-786-1700. At Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts, locally sourced comfort food, beer, wines, cocktails, live music every Friday, ChesterCommonTable.com. Well, thanks once again to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for being here. Thank you for listening. Sorry to the folks left on the line. We shall do it again, my friends. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Kayleen White answered the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, scintillating real estate action. Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello will be here. Stand by now for the book show.